Folks, welcome inside the Parisi Palace, Hive of 3773 East Broadway. This is a live edition of the Jake Feinberg Show, comedy on Power Talk. Please go to our website, powertalk.live. Download our free app to your smartphone so you can stream all of our live local programming, including Solomon on Blast, The Jim Parisi Show, and yours truly, The Jake Feinberg Show. And can't thank you enough for making us part of your day today. And oftentimes, after 4,000 radio interviews and 8 years on what is considered, in my mind, a sacred journey into the intergalactic, it is always beautiful to connect the spirits that were birthed essentially outside of the greater United States, and maybe they find refuge here, and they come here to find a career and find their own truth in music. But at the end of the day, we are all one human race, and I think it gets often lost amongst people because we get divided by cultural biases and things like that. My guest today is a decorated singer, and she comes from a deep, musical lineage in her family, but also just a wide palette as it relates to her musical tastes, and she's just very much interested in inspiring people to be themselves. And she does this by getting up on the bandstand and playing to the heavens. Fabienne Grizel, welcome to the Jake Feinberg Show.
Hi, Jake. How are you? Nice to have you. Thank you so much.
Well, it's an honor. It's great to talk to you. I just wanted for you to talk a little bit about, I don't know what the right word is. You can fill in the gaps. But, I mean, back in the early 70s, before I was ever even birthed, a record was made, cut, released because it was worthy of being released. It was high quality. Maybe it would make a hit record. Or there'd be a tune that'd be a hit, maybe not. But there were standards, and there were human beings making the music. And now you have a situation where, with technology, if you have a lot of money and you look a certain way and you have a certain amount of Twitter followers, you don't even have to be a real musician to become successful in the music industry. And I want you to riff on how basically, I think more mentally than anything else, because you're doing your thing, how do you stay above that spiritually? How do you keep looking towards the light? Because in my mind, it's ridiculous that somebody could be like, how did I sound? And the engineer's like, terrible, we'll come up and fix it. That's a joke.
Right.
I just want you to riff on that. I mean, what has been your experience in that, in the industry, and how have you dealt with that?
Again, it has changed a lot. The music industry definitely has changed a lot. Technology has been, in a lot of ways, has been wonderful and to help people, create more and differently to some degree. And I'm always open to, new avenues and new ways to do things. I'm not going to be, talking badly about people who are trying to do something creatively. But I agree with you. A lot of times I run into I feel like they're just not spending the time to get good at their craft anymore because of what happens out there with technology. Now you can fix everything to the press, to the push of a button. And as a singer, I run into that quite frequently. I'm actually not only a singer, but I also teach. And I see that with some of my students that they seem to kind of fall back on a lot of the auto tune and the whatever little bells and whistles they can use so that they don't have to work so hard on hitting the note just right or on really getting developing their instruments, which by the way takes a long time. It's not an easy fix. A voice is just like any other instrument. It takes time, and it's a craft, and it's something you have to take time to develop, and you can't be rushing it. And so, yes, I agree with you. Sometimes it's a bummer when I hear a lot of the youngsters out there just come out, and they're like, it's okay, I'll just fix it in the studio, or even now you can actually have a pedal on stage. You can fix it directly on stage and auto-tune it on stage, which is something I'm completely blown away.
I understand you don't want your concert to be a mess, you know, where there's just mistakes all over the place. But I mean, this idea of constant perfection is bizarre to me. The idea that you could hit a wrong note and actually that could be a gateway towards new musical vocabulary is a very legitimate thing. I mean, I guess going back to your childhood when you really first started to, you know, work on your voice and really kind of, you know, you obviously were listening to people that inspired you. But I mean, can you talk a little bit about, without the technology, work that it took for you to get comfortable to enjoy what was coming out of your vocal larynx?
Oh, wow. Oh, God. You know, basically a lot of trials and tribulations, a lot of trying things out, a lot of hating what I was doing for a time being as well. You know, I think every singer in the world that I've ever talked to, and me included, the first time you hear yourself in the can, you're like, ew, what is that? You know? because what you hear in your inner ear is totally different than what people hear, you know, when, especially when you're recorded. So it's just, it took a long time for me to enjoy what I was doing. And at the same time, I think it is part of the journey. You got to, like you said, you know, you fall and you try it again, and then you do it this way. And then maybe, like you said, by doing something like a wrong note or whatever you want to call that, suddenly you've discovered something else. And I agree, to some degree right now, everything has become a little too homogenized. And a little bit too, seeking perfection. And I mean, I'm a perfectionist at heart. I get it. You want it to be just right. But there is such a thing as trying stuff out and not being completely perfect and not having a perfect sound that sometimes make it just special and magic, you know. And I feel like you said, it's becoming a little bit too formula driven out there, and we're missing the point, I think
you're 100%. I think you really articulate it. Can you talk about a trial or tribulation from your earlier career that was really something that ultimately you overcame that made you a stronger person and musician?
Well, you mean musically speaking, you're talking about? Or like,
yeah, I mean, I think what I'm trying to get at is you said you experimented a lot with your voice.
I did.
I just want you to talk about a specific example of, like, because now you have all this. I mean, people spend 4 hours just to get the perfect bass drum sound. Back in the day, right, Aretha Franklin's playing, rock steady, and the sheet music's falling off the piano, and the band keeps playing. That's what became the hit. I mean, they were out of. I guess here's the point. Here, this is what I want you to talk about: is the idea of Fabienne Grizel dropping from her head to her heart into her primordial gut. You know, ultimately finding the spiritual quality, getting out of your head, and dropping into your soul. How have you evolved and done that? Because the homogenization thing is a very disturbing thing, because you can't tell who anybody is these days. There's no differentiation. And then I'm speaking more about like instrumental music, maybe improvisational instrumental music, but the same might be true for vocalese. And so how did you drop to your heart space and into your soul and get out of your head?
You know what? I think for me, that's a constant battle. I think I'm a lot more in my head than I should be. I would say just going out there and braving, you know, when I was younger, I'm going to tell you a little something. When I was very young, when I started playing very young. My father was a trumpet player in Europe, and I'm from Switzerland. And I grew up around music a lot. And then I studied music. I did classical music for many years. And then I got into jazz, which is what my father introduced me to. And then I got into from there, you know, and then I'm a big rock fan, and obviously now I have a rock band and all that. So I've always loved music in general, but I just kind of felt like, I just basically went out there and play. And when I was really young, I had tremendous stage fright. It was just horrible.
Sure.
And I would spend hours and hours right before a gig in the bathroom, just hiding myself from the world. and people knew eventually. They're like, all right, where's she at? It's time to go. Well, check the bathroom. Hiding in a corner somewhere. And here I was, you know, just curled up in the ball thinking, what am I doing to myself? This is terrible, you know? But then I would go out there, and the first couple of seconds would be, you know, I would be petrified. I would shake, literally physically shaken. You know, my mic would be shaking. Everything was shaking, right? And the moment the music, you know, kick in and I start singing, it's almost like it would just, everything would just go away. And I just zone out, and I got into my world. And it was something as magical, and it's really hard to express any other way, you know?
No, you were able at that point to become completely absorbed in the moment, and you stopped.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You forget where you are. You forget what time it is. You forget what year it is. You forget everything. All that matters at that moment is the music. And I've done that since I was little, and thank God eventually I got over this horrible stage fright that I had. But it took me quite a while. But I keep doing it and going out there, and even though I was sometimes sick to my stomach for performing because I was actually pretty shy, but I kept going out there and going out there and finding my, you know, finding my my bubble, quote unquote. I was able to overcome that, and also I was able just to kind of, you know, merge with the music and eventually as well communicate with the audience and the people that came to see me play. And it became this really beautiful thing, you know. And so that is what I particularly like about music and singing in particular. It's just this amazing, you don't have a choice. You have to be in the moment, and you have to be present. And in a way, it's a form of meditation, you know. For me, at least, it is. It's the only form of meditation I'm really good
Absolutely.
At.
I think it's completely, I really think that it's, we need to have like a, I mean, I do it on my show all the time, but I mean, there has to be an expansion of the idea of what is yoga, what is a yogic practice. You know, in many ways, what we're doing right now is yogic. What you do on the bandstand is yogic. If I'm playing drums, that's meditation. I mean, that's the whole point, is that it's not just about sitting Indian style and breathing and trying to find some kind of contemplation, which is, you know, standard. I think everybody has their own yogic state. Would you say that your ability to get over the stage fright just came with experience, or was there a certain...
Yeah, probably a combination. You know, I think by the more I did it, the better it got, you know, just like everything else, right? Just like we talked about earlier, the better the more you work at something, the better you get, the more comfortable you get. But also, I think as I got older, I started realizing, you know, I got better at my craft. And that was also part, you know, take the edge off a little bit too. I knew that I could do it when I go up on stage. I was like, all right, eventually I'll be fine, you know. So there's a bit of that confidence that you're building by doing something. The fact that I got better at singing and writing and performing got also helped me out. And it just felt kind of little by little, you know, you just create your little world that way, you know. And eventually, yeah, I just stopped hiding in the bathroom stalls, you know, for a big part of the first hour of the show.
Well, it's so very important. I mean, you obviously, I'm very proud of you that you were able to, you know, deliver and get on the stage. Some people can't even do that, you know. But the thing is, one thing I also, it's not just the technology, but it doesn't matter really what kind of music it is, but I have a big problem because in today's world, in a live setting, you'll walk in and you know, the guitar player will turn it up to 10 right away, and it stays at that dynamic frequency the entire time. It never changed. There's no dynamics. And so, Mike, I want you to talk a little bit about whether, first of all, do you feel like you love rock and roll? You have a rock band. Do you, so the question is, do you guys, is dynamics a priority in your band? And how did Fabian learn about dynamics? Because, again, it is, so you listen to pop music, or what was pop music 40, 50 years ago, and there was so much amazing dynamics. A lot of it had to do with the fact that the studio musicians who were playing the music were jazzers. They were amazing musicians. But at the same time, it's, I don't hear it anymore, and I can't really tolerate something when the dynamic level never changes. And I want to know about your evolution and whether you're conscious of that and whether it's something that's important to you.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, that's a great question. Yes, for me, dynamics are very important. And I think to me, that's what makes a song beautiful. You know, you've got to have those ups and downs, those peaks and valleys within the song. Just because otherwise, honestly, it's really hard to listen to, for even for someone like me. You know, I love dynamics. And in my band, even though we are a hard rock band, but we do have a big, we're very conscious of dynamics in our music and when we perform. So we get pretty loud, but we have those moments of calm as well in between, and within the song we come up and down a lot. So that is actually something that we're very picky about. And we try to also adapt to the surroundings. So if you come into a place that, you know, it's a smaller venue, it doesn't have, you know, such a big, you know, you can't be as loud, you know, you're going to have to tone it down a little
bit.
You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to basically adapt to the room. And I feel like a lot of bands might not do that as well, but they really should, because, you know, you're always going to be as good as you sound. And the sound is so important. It really, really is. So for us as a band, even though we are a rock band, we're very, very picky about dynamics. And that starts already in the studio when we rehearse, in our rehearsal room. We start working on that already right there and then. And I'm not saying that sometimes we don't get, you know, loud and such. We do. But we always try to, you know, bring it down to, you know, a beautiful dynamic within the song, because I think that's what makes a song, you know,
yeah,
special.
Yeah, it's called tension and release and pulse.
Right.
You need to have both of those. And
correct.
You know, do you guys ever play the same song the same way once live?
You mean over and over?
No, I mean
the record.
What I'm saying, there's a great line from the bass player from the Grateful Dead when playing live. He said, "We never play the same song the same way once," meaning that essentially the tune has contours to it, but it's always different every time based on the fact of the solos, the feel.
Sure.
I mean, what I'm saying is that's the other part of it, this sort of need for a formula trip that I hate. Like the idea that people come to shows expecting to hear exactly what is off the record. I mean, you go back to someone like Lee Morgan or Miles Davis, you know, those guys made records, but they came to play a show. Mm-hmm. And so there, you know, a lot of times Miles, like, you know, he'd turn his back on the audience and they didn't understand why he did that. And a lot of it was because the message from them was, listen, they didn't announce it, but they just, it was unstated, but they said, we dig our music and we hope you dig our music. But even if you don't, we're still going to play our music. They weren't there to placate or play something exactly the way it is off the record. Have you, where do you fall on that?
Okay, so this is something that we did consciously too with my band, with Never Wander. When we went into the studio, we did our EP last year, we made a conscious decision of utilizing sounds and effects and things that we could do in the studio. Because when we go out and live and play live, we are actually a live band. This is where our strength is. We are a good live band. And so what we do when we're live is going to be what we do when we're live. And it's really about how do we feel about doing it that night, you know? The song structure is going to be the same, you know, the lyrics, et cetera, et cetera. But within that, the solos might change. I mean, Jay, the guitar player of my band, is a phenomenal guitar player, and he's just, you know, sometimes he just throws stuff in there that you're like, oh, that was really cool. What was that, you know? I mean, it's just like whatever kind of feels right at that moment to all of us, and we kind of go with the flow, you know? And it's just, I feel like it's important to people to understand too that if they come see us play, they come see a band play, if you want to hear exactly what we're playing on the record, then play the record. If you're coming to see a show live, then you're going to get a different side of that song, you know?
I did.
And we're going to give you something a little different than you didn't get to hear on the record. And this is, to me, this is, there's a difference between playing a live song and you know, and playing, you know, and listening to a recording song, you know what I mean? It's got a bit of a, it should be different. I don't want to play it exactly like on the record every time. I kind of, you know, I feel like also, because you play the same song over and over, you know, as a musician, you know what I mean? You're just kind of, you kind of got to keep it interesting for yourself as well, you know? Sometimes you just got to do it a little bit different. Or sometimes that night, you know what? I don't know. For whatever reason, you get inspired by the gods of music and right. something comes through you and you're like, all right, I'm just doing this, you know?
No, I did. And I think it's...
And it works. And, you know, and I think that's the cool part about doing live shows, you know? You just never know what you're going to get, you know? You just kind of... You just kind of go with it, you know.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit it's a little bit like reverse engineering thinking, but I'm wondering also, like, so many people, so many younger cats that I talk to that are, they're just constantly making new albums or new EPs, and there's mm-hmm. really no touring circuit per se, and mm-hmm. clearly the industry is not what it once was, where you'd have, you know, Warner Brothers, you know, they'd make so much money off you know, James Taylor record that they could write off a $19,000 loss on a road tour. But the point is that, you know, people just are in the studio, and I don't feel like that a song can take on a life of its own unless it's been road tested a lot before it goes into the studio. So do you find yourself playing new material live before you actually cut it on the album so that there's a real heartbeat to it? Because otherwise, the songs are almost too embryonic in my mind to really create. I'm talking about on the record. Do you play? Do you play them live? Do you play new material live before you cut it?
Yes, we do. So, I mean, you know, to each his own, and I guess it depends also what kind of music do you play. You know what I mean? But for us, yes, we do that. So we have a bunch of songs right now that we're coming. If you come to see us play, we will play them live. But we haven't recorded them yet. It's going to come on our upcoming record. So for different reasons, yes, first of all, we'd like to see what people think. And also because, honestly, we're so excited about having, we like our songs. The songs are really, we find, you know, that we're just really excited to have those new songs out there. And we just want to go and play them, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of like when we finish a song and we're like, all right, this is ready to be, you know, we can start playing it out there. We start doing that, and then eventually it does end up on a record, and I feel like lately that's kind of what we've been doing. So there is a couple songs that we're playing in the live shows right now that have not made it to the record yet, but it's going to be in the next record. So
how do you think that... I mean, do you think that since you've been performing them for a minute, you think that they've... Mm-hmm. that they've taken on their own life and feel just by being able to play them live, you'll have an easier time actually maybe just cutting it in the studio?
I think so too. To some degree, I think so, yes. I mean, it's nice to see the reaction of people, you know, because we like what we do, but, you know, you just never know how people are going to receive what you do. So it's nice to see that these people are really, like, you know, our fans and everybody that comes see us, they really seem to really dig those new songs. And in a way, yeah, I feel like the more, you know, the more you play them, the more acquired they are. But again, who knows what we'll end up doing in the studio, because when we end up gathering the four of us in the studio, you know, a lot of different things happen. And then, you know, we're storming with ideas and, you know, who knows how we're going to end up producing it. But I think I should find it interesting that, you know, there's different ways to play a song, and playing it live is one way, and then doing it in the studio is another, at least for me. I think that there's it's kind of lets me as a singer and as a songwriter, it kind of allows me to do to be two types of artist, you know. One in the studio that's got, you know, likes to play with all these different sounds and all these different stuff and just kind of go a little crazy with whatever, how far I can stretch it. And then the one on stage live that just kind of likes to just feel it and go a little bit more with my gut feeling and being a little bit more in the moment at that time. So I feel like playing it live is definitely a big part of doing the songs. And for us, it seems to work that way, you know. We do play the songs before we put them on the record. At least so far, that's what we've been doing. So, yeah.
I'm talking to a very articulate cat, Fabian Grizel. We have a game on this program called Name That Voice. I don't expect you to know who this is, but I do want you to pay attention to the content, and then we'll come back and break it down.
Okay.
With another memory I had, and it came to me so many years later, when I first left home and I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I was playing in this band, and I lived in a barn. I had just left home, and I had absolutely no money. I was stealing food from a total station, ramen noodles, you know,
right,
and cans of soup. I'd like, you know, put them into my jacket. I mean, literally, the time honored tradition of starving musicians. But I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I lived very close to the campus of the University of Michigan, and every day I would walk around that campus because there was a lot of shops and restaurants and record stores around the campus. So I would be walking side by side, almost arm in arm, with kids that were my exact same age, and they were all going to college, and I wasn't. I was living in a freezing barn and starving and stealing food just so I could play guitar in a rock and roll band. And never once did it occur to me that I should be doing what they were doing. I never, ever doubted myself, and I never thought, well, you know, maybe I should try to go to college like they are because it's a smarter move. It never dawned on me until at least 15 years later when, you know, I grew up and had some hindsight and realized that that's how badly I wanted to do this, and that's how much it meant to me. And it was really a matter of life or death back then. And the idea of writing songs and staying in music, playing, singing, still does feel that way to me. And singing is this physical resonant action that happens that once you get to a certain level with it and you're pretty good at it, it's something that's very, very hard to live without. So I understand what he meant in that sense. So,
well, that was a friend of mine, really, really talented singer and dynamic musician, Neo Casal, who lives in Southern California. But, you know, what stood out from what I wanted you to riff on was the idea of the calling. I mean, so many of the musicians that I've talked to, the music found them, you know. And is there a story that you can that you can talk about that, you know, maybe not the same one as his, but something that, you know, where it was like you were clearly going against mainstream society. It made no logical sense. And yet you, maybe you weren't even conscious of it at the time, but looking back on it, you're like, boy, I really was. It really was a divine calling.
Right. No, I can 100% relate to that time. And I was born that way, I think. I just, since I was very little, music was the only thing I was obsessed with. I never wanted to really do anything else in my life. And I mean, there was such a strong pull that actually brought me here, you know, at a very early age, alone. I didn't know anybody. I barely spoke the language. I went against my family, against my friends, against everybody that, you know, it was a very, very difficult thing to do. I come from Switzerland. I come from Geneva. I did finish college, on the other hand. That was the deal I made with my mother, so she would allow me to come here at 19 years old, 20 years old. But I went against everything. I walked away from a very lucrative career in banking, believe it or not. I said, you know what? I'm not doing that. I'm a musician. That's what I want to do, and I don't care about anything else. And everybody thought I was nuts, you know. And I get it now, you know. Like,
no, you are nuts, though. I mean, you are off the grid, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. Completely, you know, off my meds. But you know, again, it was for me, it was just the only thing that I ever wanted to do. There was just no another question in my mind that this is what I was supposed to be doing. So I did. It brought me here. I with very little money in my pocket. I didn't know how I was going to stay in the country. I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, my English sucked. I mean, you know, it's just, I just thought, well, I don't know. I'll just go and see what happens. And I've never looked back. So all of that because I need to play music. It's a visceral need. It's a visceral need to sing, like he said. It's something that I could never replace it by with anything else. I tried. I actually stopped playing for a few years, back, and I have never felt so miserable in my life. I felt like I was completely had lost a part of myself that I needed to find again. And it was just really, it's just always been my, you know, I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and singing and writing and being in music is me. There is really not much else out there for me that equivalent that pleasure and that sense of well-being that I get when I'm in the moment, when I play music, when I sing, when I perform, when I write. I feel like I'm in the right place. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And
it's your purpose. You found your purpose. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's really, you know, it's just, there's, like I said, I tried to do other things for a bit but nothing could compare it to that. And so I came right back to it and I, you know, kept going ever since. And it's just who I am. I think when you're a musician, the whole society tells you, oh my God, this is crazy. And, you know, this is a very difficult career. And, you know, how many people are doing that? And you're like, yeah, you know, we all know that, you know, this is not an easy career. Nobody said it was. But it's not about that so much as it is, I have to do this. It's not always I want to do this, because sometimes it's really hard. But it's, I have to do this. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. And if I'm not doing this, I don't know who I am. And it's really, for me, it's really that clear. And I've been like that since I was little. It's just always been that thing I have to do. And someone asked me one time, you know, why did I choose singing? And I said, you know, I don't think I chose it. I think, like you said, it chose me.
Right. I've
always liked to sing, and there's something that happens when I sing physically, because it is a physical act, obviously, it's a physical activity, but it's also, it's a spiritual, a physical, and all coming up together at once. And it's there's something just magical for me about singing, and there is nothing in the world that equivalent that. Nothing, absolutely nothing. No drugs in the world, no alcohol in the world, no material, anything in the world that equivalent that for me. For me, singing and music particularly is my first love, and I think always will be. I think it's something that I need to be doing on a regular basis if I just want to feel good, you know?
Right. No, it's a spirit. I mean, it's feeding you spiritually. Aside from the opportunities, business opportunities that presented themselves in the States, what were your intentions? I think you just answered the question, but I mean, so many cats today are like, oh, I want to be like that person. They're famous. They make a lot of money. I want to get into music. They do it. Their intentions are just not really aligned with the spiritual qualities of music and the healing qualities of music. And what were your intentions for getting into music in the first place? Obviously you said you were born with that, but I mean, when you go to the States, I mean, was it like, well, because there's opportunity to make a living there and there's not in Geneva, like what were your intentions for coming here?
Okay. I went to music school when I came to LA. That was what I was going to do. And then I just thought, all right, we'll go from there. You know, I didn't think I was going to move here permanently. It just kind of happened, you know, little by little. But I went to music school. So I just wanted to learn more. I wanted to do more. In Geneva, there was not a whole lot of music schools at the time. that would teach, you know, contemporary music. It was mostly classical oriented, and you had the conservatory and all that. And I like classical music, and I did study that for a bit, but I wanted to do other things. So I came to the States because, you know, the United States has wonderful music schools, really. And so I thought, you know, I want to learn my craft. I want to be better at what I do. I want to get as far as I can go and be as, you know, spend the time to really get good at what I do. So that's kind of what brought me here, really. And then when I was younger, around the same time that I was in school, I got involved with the band, and we got offered a demo deal by RCA Records. So, and then I ended up staying because of that reason. And then, you know, deals are interesting. You know, as soon as we got it, we lost it.
Right. Like, unbelievable.
It was like, what? It happened, right?
It wasn't a dream. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't a mirage, right? Yeah. So then I ended up staying because then, you know, once you get a taste for it, it's really hard to go back to, you know, quote unquote, a more conventional lifestyle, you know. So since I was lucky enough that I got involved in something like that early on, I decided to stay. And then I just thought, well, I'm here, and I'm just going to give it my best shot. And I kept studying. I studied a long time. I studied under Dr. Joel Ewing, which was a professor at Juilliard, and I did the Juilliard program with him as well, privately. And then, so I kept learning my craft, and I kept working on it. And I feel like LA has been my base for that. There's so much music here, and there's so much knowledge here, and there's so many things that are available to you here. You just have to go and seek it, and you know, surround yourself with people that are better than you, and know
that's
more
key.
Than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's always been what I've been trying to do. And I was lucky enough that I met some wonderful people who were willing to teach me, and I could learn from.
I have a hard time with, things evolve, and, you know, life moves on, technology moves on and things like that. But, you know, there's like, music today is being taught or made in the academy. And I don't really feel like musical vocabulary can grow in academia. And I just wonder, being that you are so schooled, what is one thing that you learned in school that you can apply directly to the bandstand at your next gig or whatever gig you play? I mean, what is the most applicable thing that you learned in all those years that you can take on the bandstand and use?
Interesting.
You know what I'm saying is that you're a live performer. You get off on that. You love to raise the collective consciousness of the band, and therefore then to the audience and back to the band. That's what the magic of music is. But you've also been schooled, and I'm just trying to figure out what it is that you can apply, because that's the crisis in music now. It's a supply and demand issue. You have all these people coming out with huge facility, knowledge, chops, you know, and they either don't have places to play, or they've never even played in a band before. They don't even know how to have a conversation. So I'm just,
right.
What is one tangible thing that you can take from all your years of studying that you can apply to the bandstand?
Honestly, the technique that I acquired is saved my butt more than once. I when I get sick, you know, and I've had to go sing, you know, and I would have never been able to do it. You know, I've been singing out there and doing shows. Last time was in November. I had a bronchitis, and we were in Las Vegas, and we had two shows booked back to back. And I was sick, I was really sick. But the fact that I have, you know, acquired some chops throughout the years and really, you know, learned some tricks, I was able to pull it off. You know, when probably if I didn't have that behind me, I would have not been able to go out there and sing. You know, being sick as I was. So I think that I think whatever you learn and technique and all that is very valuable, especially as a singer. I think that there's just a lot of singers out there who don't spend enough time on their technique, or you know, they just think, ah, I can just sing, you know, it's fine. Well, you might be able to do this once, twice, third time, but the 10th time you're out there, or even if you're sick, or if you're the 10th show in a row, you might not be able to pull it off unless you know a few things. And so that is something that I can say has really helped me a lot, is all the technique and all the hours that I spend working on my instrument that has saved me more than once.
Well, let me ask you, though. I'm going to ask you, so, I mean, like, you have bronchitis. I mean, it doesn't matter how much facility or technique you have, if you have bronchitis, I mean, are you saying that you actually learn tricks in academia? Like, there was a lesson that related to, if you are sick, these are some tricks that you can learn? Or what I'm getting at is, like, not that it was a waste of time, I don't mean it like that at all, but I'm saying, you know, like, how did they teach you tricks to get through times that you're not feeling well?
It's just, you know, learning how to deal with your instrument, learn about your instrument, right? You know, how does it work?
Right.
How does your instrument work? It's a wind instrument, right? It's got, where's the resonance going? When you're sick, how does that affect you? You know, like, how can you sing even though you're sick? Can you sing even though you're sick?
Right.
Is there a way to do it? I mean, these are all things that you learn, and by doing them, also you're discovering that your body has all these different ways you can actually work around it. Even though it might not be your best performance in the world, you might be able to pull it off if you know enough about your instrument. And that's what I mean by that. Clearly, there's some times where you're not going to be able to. I mean, you know, you lose your voice. But I'm talking about there's within that realm of possibilities, within that realm of knowledge, and knowing about how to take care of my body when I need it to take care of my body, how far I can stretch it, how far can I push it when I'm on stage, when I'm not feeling well. You know, all these are things that I've learned along the way, and I've also learned that because I know my instrument so well. And this is something that I've learned with technique, really, and by studying for so many years. So there is definitely benefit in knowing, you know, your instrument, just like a guitar player, just like a drummer, just like anybody else. And then after that, clearly, when you're on stage and all that, then you have to put that aside for a bit, you know, and just kind of let your feelings poke through and let the performance happen. You know, you just got to be able to acquire the knowledge that you need to get out there, and then once you're out there, you just have to kind of take it from there, you know.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say, I mean, some cats have told me just incredible stories about, you know, being, you know, having pneumonia, and they should be in the hospital, but they're not going to miss the gig, and they wind up after the gig, people are coming up to them saying, I've never heard you play like that in my life. That was the most amazing you've ever played in your life. You know,
exactly.
You know, so exactly. It is the healing qualities.
Sometimes the fever helps, you know.
Yeah, right. So let me, before, you know, we've been cooking here for about 45 minutes. I just wanted to ask you, how much do you, like, if I came to see you, do you only sing, or do you play an instrument? Do you improvise on your instrument?
My instrument primarily is singing. That is what I've done. That's what I know well, and that's what I'm good at. But I started picking up the guitar a couple years ago, so I played a little bit of acoustic guitar. Sometimes I play with the band on stage a couple songs here and there. Yeah. And I write at the guitar as well.
Is it an area that you would like to grow in, is instrumental improvisation?
I think I like all kinds of instruments, but besides singing, guitar has always been, you know, has a little soft spot for me in my heart. I've always loved guitar. So I would love to get better at it and eventually, yeah, do more with it for sure. The thing is, it's like everything else, it takes time, and I have so little of it these days that it's taking a little bit longer than I want to get better at this stuff. But yeah, eventually I'd like to do more with the guitar. I'd like to perform a bit more with it as well, within the band or on my own.
Right. No, I mean,
it can,
that's fascinating stuff, Fabian. It was, you know, I got to tell you, it was, wonderful to connect with you. And when I'm
you too.
Yeah, when I'm out in I don't know, you guys play like, are you play all over the country, or are you just like basically a regional band, or where?
Right now, Never Wonder and I were playing mostly on the West Coast. So at the moment, we play in San Diego, I believe, in June. People can go check it out at neverwonder.com. It's like all the upcoming bands. We have a show coming up at Molly Malone's June 8th. We sometimes go to Vegas. We're going to be at in Austin at South by Southwest next year. So we're kind of branching out slowly but surely, you know. Where are you located?
I'm in Tucson, Arizona. So what I'm saying is on my journeys, if I will reach out to you if I'm in that Southern California region, too. Hopefully come see you play, and
That would be lovely. We'd love to see you there. The idea is for us to branch out a bit further away, you know, from a bit more in the center of the country, and then travel the country at some point. But yeah, for now this is what we have planned for the next few months. The idea is eventually we'd like to go on tour. And I would like to bring the band to Europe at some point as well.
Well, I think if you have these visions, ultimately, if you have persevered and gone this far, then all that stuff will materialize in its own way, natural way, which is a very beautiful thing. And I really wish you all the best, Fabienne. I'll get you.
Thank you.
I'll get you a copy of this. I'll get a copy of this to you later tonight or tomorrow.
I appreciate that. But thank you again for having me. Really, that was lovely, and it was great talking to you as well.
So. Have a beautiful day, my friend.
All right, you as well.
All right,
take care.
Later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow, what a day. Darren Rademacher, Fabienne Grizel, another two interviews on the Jake Feinberg Show. We'll be back tomorrow with two more interviews. It's a big week coming off of Jazz Fest, still reverberating from New Orleans. That's it. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace. Thank you.